Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and today we have a special program featuring the winners of the 2015 Writers' Cafe Contest, sponsored by the Writing Center of the University of Pittsburgh. With us today are six writers reading their winning pieces of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. We will also talk with writer Barbara Edelman, who will tell us about the Writers' Cafe and the Writing Center. Barbara Edelman is a lecturer in English at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches writing and literature and coordinates the Writers' Cafe with Julianne McAdoo. She is the author of two chapbooks of poetry, most recently Exposure from Finishing Line Press, 2014. Hi, Barbara. How you doing?
Good, Jan. How are you?
I'm great. This is, I don't know how many years we've been doing the Writers' Cafe winners, but it's always really interesting. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Writers' Cafe, what it is, and what the contest is.
So the cafe is a program at the Writing Center at the University of Pittsburgh, where students come Friday afternoons from 3 to 5 to write. And we invite writers, professional writers, usually who are also teachers, to facilitate sessions. Usually they'll give some kind of a craft talk and then perhaps read from their own work. And then they'll give an exercise, a prompt for students. Students will write and share their work. It's a wonderful program. I'm a little biased because it's very casual, very supportive. Students almost always want to share. And people come not just from writing programs, but from all departments of the university. Lots of people come from the community. Sometimes our facilitators are people who are not academics at all. So it's a wonderful mix of people. I think it's a terrific opportunity. And we've even gotten students so enthusiastic that they've formed their own spin-off and started workshops from the Writers' Cafe. So it's a student-run Writers' Cafe. It was developed by Gita Kothari, who's director of the Writing Center, and Ellen Smith, who's the founding coordinator of the Writers' Cafe, and Jean Grace, and very much helped by Sandy Foster, who's the Writing Center assistant.
And do you know how many years it's been now?
About 12.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I noticed just being in the community that there's much more publicity now, many more writers from out of town. Seems to be growing and thriving.
Yeah, it is. Our attendance has been fabulous this year. And the contest also draws people. It's such a great opportunity. There's actual money involved, and being on the radio is wonderful for the students. So the Prosody connection is very important to us. Thank you.
Oh, sure. What is the money part?
The prizes.
Oh, okay.
$200 for first prize and $100 for second. Did you think I meant money for you?
I was hoping, yeah.
Yeah.
No, not
for me either.
That's great for the students, it really is, and for the community. Could you tell us who the judges were this year?
Oh, yes. So all three judges teach at Pitt, but they're not teaching. They're writers who are teaching in composition so that they would not have seen the work. All the submissions are judged anonymously. Julianne McAdoo, a fiction writer, judged fiction. Josh Zalesnik, a poet, judged poetry. And Renee Primus, who writes nonfiction, judged the nonfiction.
Okay. I think that covers it. Thanks so much for bringing these writers in.
Thank you.
Our first place poetry winner is Mackenzie Yordi for her poem Second Story. Mackenzie Yordi is a senior computer science major at the University of Pittsburgh with double minors in studio arts and creative writing. After graduating in April 2016, she aims to find work in 3D modeling and animation. Hi, Mackenzie. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Congratulations. This is a big honor, winning first place in poetry.
Oh, thanks so much. This is my first contest that I've ever entered.
Wow. And you're a computer science major winning poetry contests. How do you feel about that?
It's really cool, I think, that you can sort of have these crossovers between your interests and stuff. And even if I'm into science, I can also be into the arts.
That's right. Okay. So were you going to start with your winning poem?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is called Second Story. I'm asleep when Andy taps at my sister's window, where she is asleep in her crib, and Dad is asleep on the floor, and I am awake next to him, because Andy knocks gentle knuckles against the glass and tells me to let him in. I'm awake when I push my blankets down, my legs move to stand face to face with him through the frame. My dad rolls over to question me, and I point at the boy clinging to a ladder propped against the house. "You're sleeping," Dad says. "Lie back down." I'm asleep when Andy taps again, long-fingered hands pressed flat to the glass, struggling to slide it open from the outside. I try to help him, but, "You're dreaming," Dad says. "Go back to sleep." I'm awake when the dark night turns the glass to a mirror, and it's my own white ghost reflected in the window, my own small thumb hooked to open the latch. I'm asleep the next day when I stand under Andy, hanging by his skinny white arms from the monkey bars, and ask if he came to my house last night, crept up to my second story, and drummed the pads of his fingers on glass. He drops to the ground in front of me with his black t-shirt, hair as pale as his skin, his voice steady the way rain patters against windows. He tells me, "Maybe." This poem is called Worry War. Most his evenings end like night tides pulling back, the sands dragged from his raw shores. Goodbye, dark eyes, lonely mouth on his ribs, lonely drinks in his dusk. Take him apart when they part, each touch calls for more. Tap, the bar sides buzz. Next to him there is a boy, next to him there is a body and a dissent, a disabusing, an interrogation, a shh. Shot, 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 shot. Stalled breathing until a hand reaches out to tap, tap. The good for one night boy asks for a shot. This is called Susquehanna. The river woke in early April when water ran from snow slush down muddy banks. Swollen, she spilled over land, over roads that cracked beneath her. The river felt through each building with slow, icy fingers until she reached the last, a house with history and cocoa-colored shingles. She pulled up its roots and looked inside. It was empty like the rest. They drifted together until the house crumbled against a bridge and she was alone again. The river sought the children whose playground she had turned to a sewage-smelling beach, sprawled into the red brick school and lapped at the lockers, seeped under classroom doors, dribbled across the gym, tumbled down between velvet theater seats, but no one was there. The river stretched too far, glad to feel the tug of an old bed as her excess drained into the Chesapeake. In days, the land was dry again, dusted brown and smooth like windswept stone. But still the people did not come to live in their houses, and the children did not go to school.
That's the poetry of Mackenzie Yordi, who's the first place winner in poetry of the Writers' Cafe contest. Congratulations. Again, those poems are great.
Thank you.
Okay, and good luck with
Thanks.
Everything. Okay. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the winners of the 2015 Writers' Cafe Contest from the University of Pittsburgh. The first place fiction winner is Mary Seco for her story entitled Leash Training. Mary Seco was the winner of the 2015 Monte Culver Award. She plans to graduate in December with a bachelor's in writing, as well as a certificate in gender, sexuality, and women's studies, and a related concentration in Latin American studies. Hi, Mary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Begin with your story.
Okay. As you said, this is entitled Leash Training. The dog my mother bought when we moved to our new house was a consolation gift. It took weeks of begging and then crying when the begging didn't work to convince her to take me to the pet store. Just to look, I told her. By the time she agreed, the dog that I had secretly been visiting on my way home from school, a happy-looking terrier, was gone. In his place, filling all four corners of his too small cage, was Crash, though of course he wasn't Crash then. My mother threatened to leave him at my father's if I ever forgot to feed him, but we brought him home that day anyway. I forgot plenty of times, but by then he had become her dog and her dog only. He loved my mother. He loved her when she doled out single-serving scratches behind the ears, and he loved her even more when she rubbed his nose in the mess he made on the living room carpet. Occasionally, when she was gone and he'd worn himself out from whining after her, he would try to lie down beside me. He was a nervous animal, though, and paced back and forth in front of the TV until I told him to get lost. When we got Crash, my best friend was a girl named Bridget, and to this day that name sounds tall and broad, like it belongs to stringy hair and teeth that force their way out from behind thin lips. For years after I left home, I was surprised to meet Bridgets who did not look like the first. I had no little sister, so it was Crash we dressed up. We put him in the silk 90s that no longer fit my mother, but she still kept, in the hopeful part of her closet. One day, late in summer, we dressed Crash in a white nightgown that bunched around his neck and would go no further, and a red silk robe that we tied between his front and back legs. We let go of his collar, unable to imagine he wanted to be anywhere but with us, fulfilling his role as a life-size doll. Within 5 minutes, the clothes were ruined. We buried them in the backyard so my mother wouldn't know. At this point in my childhood, none of the dogs in our neighborhood were leash trained. There was no reason for them to be. The house was on a dead-end street, and regardless of how much your parents actually owned, every kid's yard extended through the woods that bordered our neighborhood on three sides. Crash ran as he liked. Sometimes through the woods, sometimes through the fields beyond them, and sometimes into neighbors' yards. When that happened, they shooed him away, as we did with their dogs. The problem with this was that I had decided I wanted to take Crash for a walk. It was the summer between fourth and fifth grade, and I had just started shaving my legs in secret. My oldest girl cousin taught me, a secret favor, after she found me trying to pull the hair out one by one with a pair of tweezers. I was obsessed. I lay in bed at night imagining myself, smooth legs extended beneath rolled-up shorts, walking my dog on a leash while the neighborhood boys watched. Bridget did not yet shave her legs, and I told her this was okay because the hair came in fine and blonde. "You're lucky," I told her. "It's a real chore." I felt ancient, maternal, like I was remembering saying it even as the words left my lips. Shaved legs or not, Bridget agreed to come with me as I walked Crash. When we brought the leash over to him, he sniffed it and wagged his tail. Even he agreed with the plan. The trees lining the street were run through with late summer sun so that you could see every vein on every leaf, and although there were no neighborhood boys out in their yards at that time, I knew they were inevitable, that they would come as Bridget and I walked Crash, drawn to playing their role by the way we played ours. We were not even to the end of our driveway when Crash pulled himself free. We ran after him, but he was faster, even after we abandoned our flip-flops and took to the asphalt in bare feet. We reached the Low Presti's house, as far as I was allowed to go without an adult, and then, without a word, walked home.
That was Mary Seco reading her story, Leash Training, first place fiction winner. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan.
The first place nonfiction winner in the Writers' Cafe contest is Anna Nguyen for her essay, When Life Stings. Anna Nguyen is a sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh pursuing a major in Spanish with a minor in English writing and a certificate in Latin American studies. As a Connecticut native with an interest in health and patient care, she hopes to attend a physician assistant program following graduation. Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Congratulations on winning.
Thank you.
And you're going to begin with your story.
I actually just want to give a brief intro. I wrote this piece about a car accident that I got into last June, but I'll be starting about in the middle of it. On the southwestern handle of Connecticut, New Canaan holds a population of about 20,000 residents. With a quaint train station at the heart of Main Street, many parents have found this town as the perfect settlement for their children. As New Canaan boasts a leading school system, ranked 17th in the state and 480th nationally. So basically a golden star by the standards of the U.S. News. And a mere hour-long train ride to New York City, where most men dressed in tailored suits pride themselves with their employment as either CEOs or very important persons on Wall Street. Under such given leisure, a lot of New Canaanites consist of the stereotypic white and wealthy Republican Americans. How did a Vietnamese-American family end up in this little town? Well, according to my parents, the answer falls down to an Asian stereotype. We live here because of the prestigious public schools that promise the development of young minds into intelligent ones. Or in other words, a large ratio of New Canaan High School graduates end up in Ivy League schools, which leads to them becoming doctors or lawyers or pursuing other professions with high-paying jobs where in the end, they will come back to this little town to live in little mansions and raise smart little children just like them. So in short, another culturally and socially bred cycle, if you ask me. But even now, as a student enrolled at the University of Pittsburgh, with goals no longer in hopes of pursuing the pre-medicine track, I often fall astray from my expected path. Then again, don't we all? Winding back and forth down the road, I made sure to keep my eyes focused straight ahead, remembering to shift steadily when the bend would curve over. Concentrating altogether, I let Mariah Carey's soothing vocals settle in my eardrums. And in that moment, I seemed to have let the music settle too instantaneously as my chest began to move. A vibration that I initially assumed was from the bass all of a sudden was coming from underneath my shirt. Moving up and down, my worst fears immediately became reality as I realized a tiny honeybee had decided she wanted to follow me home. Like any surprise, I reacted in the worst possible way, losing complete control. I tried to get the bee out of my shirt by repeatedly hitting myself, hoping to squish the little invader. In doing so, I released the threatened reaction of this worker bee, forcing her to instinctively sting me. A sharp pain pierced my skin. Sudden memories of visiting the dreaded pediatrics office for annual checkups as a child flooded my mind. The fear cluttering up in your veins just as an icy cool wipe of alcohol prepares your victimized skin for a shot. The seconds as the overly friendly nurse with her wide toothy smile and buttery squinted eyes opens the needle, flicks it, and asks if you are ready. I was never ready, but at least I knew it was coming. Without warning, without signs, a needle punctured my chest, not to withdraw blood, but this time to infuse venom into my body. Bothering my nerves, a burning sensation enclosed around me, only to block out all other concerns. And with the loss of control, my head bumped against the roof the moment the car jerked past the curb as trees found their way right in front of me, inching closer and closer.
That was Anna Nguyen reading her essay, When Life Stings. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the winner of the 2015 Writers Cafe Contest from the University of Pittsburgh. Next, we'll hear from second place poetry winner Shannon Kelly for her poem, Occupation. Shannon Kelly is an undecided freshman attending the University of Pittsburgh. She has been a three-time finalist in the Bucks County High School Poet Laureate Contest. She has been writing poetry since she was 14 years old. She writes mainly about the themes of family, nature, and dreams. Hi, Shannon. You're winning poetry contests. Why not major in creative writing?
I'm thinking about it. It's not totally, you know, out of reach, but I'm thinking about it.
Okay, I'm just saying. Okay, why don't you read your winning poem?
Okay. This is called Occupation. A vision of more and more cold souls occupying my mother's one womb before I. And I look at women, wondering the count that have lost eyes, if I have lived in any, and how many moms have carried me. If they see me in their dreams, like I do, at night, a waning and waxing of family, I own as many mothers as moons. My next one is called 14 Hours. I dreamt of a Hungarian singer who I praised for red words, dress pattern velvet fabrics. Sitting on a Belgian store ledge with my sister, splitting, picking, snorting into an overpriced waffle, outrageous American giants with powdered faces, powdered lips, tasting the stares of admirable locals, endeared by their cross-legged, chip-polished ambience. I remember how culture became pockets of crust, drunken lagers and chicken-starved bees, but also became a square sidewalk revelation, sharing sticks of that same red, smudged by our 60 euro of chocolate, our lighter flagged faces. The Wake. As the sun rises in burdensome clouds, my crusted eyelids break, reseal. My lips filter through, and you linger on my mouth from months before, beyond form. A space next to me shows slow loneliness. And last night's lunar light exposed where I wish it you, illuminating next to me in bed. You were here at once, a wrinkle in water, a while, whiteness bounding ribbons upon the poor night, then abruptness, You are here in hollow me, here in every me, a constant, as if love could be measured in anything with any human feelings at all.
It's the poetry of Shannon Kelly. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from second place winner in fiction, Ojao Anduanya, for her story, The Cure. Ojao Anduanya is a Nigerian-American student, a sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh. Ojao has explored how writing can be integrated into healthcare. She studies English writing with a concentration in fiction and is pursuing a pre-physician assistant track. Her writing is inspired by the work of writers such as Juno Diaz, Chimamanda Adichie, and Khaled Hosseini. Hi, Ojao, and congratulations.
Hi, thank you very much.
Okay. So please read from your story, The Cure.
All right. Sister Catherine vomited a third time. Thick chunks of dikiri clung to her pale blue habit and dripped off her glass rosary beads. She steadied herself. Her stomach coiled tightly in knots. She sheathed her nose and mouth. His stench was overpowering. It came in short but strong waves. He was like nothing she had ever seen before. The boy carried a frail, smallish frame. His long, curly hair was matted with feces, and his face was streaked with what looked like blood, dirt, and dry tears. His eyes were two monstrous moons, and the outer rims red from crying. She wiped her mouth with the palm of her hand, trying to find her voice. "Who has done this to you, child? Where is your ama?" she barely whispered. The boy shook his head. His cracked lips formed words, but nothing came out. His voice was as dry as the narrow, parched road that was straddled between their legs. A gust of wind picked up and whistled between the trees. Later, she would find the courage to take his hand and lead him to the only place she could think of, an orphanage within miles of Pokhara, a large town where she did her service. At the door, the children would greet him with gaped mouths, curious eyes, and scrunched noses. "Sister Catherine, he smells like crap," a small toothless girl named Parthivi called out. A chorus of giggles erupted from the jumpy children. Sister Catherine quickly led the boy up the stairs to a small communal bathroom on the upper floor. The only clean shower stall was the one with the broken curtain at the far end of the bathroom. The boy allowed her to slide his dank shirt over his small head. She slowly peeled off his dirt-encrusted trousers. Sister Catherine's jaw tightened. There were visible teeth marks on his penis. Purple and black bruises mapped his thighs and ankles. She shivered, locking eyes with the boy. Her chest tightened as she sponged his arms, fingers, and back. Her hands were cautious, steady. "Tapeko na make ho. What is your name, my child?"
Our next reader is the second place nonfiction winner, Hannah Berg, for her essay, Indigestion. Hannah Berg is a freshman at Pitt, leaning towards an English major. She graduated high school in Bulgaria, where she was editor-in-chief of the literary magazine and won third prize in a short story competition. She has written mostly fiction and poetry, but is studying techniques in all genres. Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. So we're looking forward to your story. So go ahead.
This piece is called Indigestion. "It's okay to be a little racist," George Baker says, as he helps himself to a second abundant serving of eggplant parmesan. The sentence is the end of a long monologue about how things used to be back in his day. All I can think is that this man probably did have his day, but now we are long past it, and times have changed. George's eyes buckle beneath jutting brows. His hair is thin and mostly gray. His skin sags as he lifts his fork to his mouth. I don't look at him, instead focus on picking at the greasy tomato cheese eggplant mess on my plate. It is lukewarm, an attempt to reheat the mass failed. As I sit in silence, small oily bites find a corner of my stomach to hide in. I let my right foot bump Mike's under the table, both to reassure myself that he's there and to express my discomfort. This dinner, both the food and the conversation, will later give me indigestion. I want to yell at him. No, it is really not okay to be at all racist. No. But what can I do? I'm white, 18, a girl, and a guest in George's home, where he sits in the throne at the head of the table. An argument can't even begin to form on my greasy tongue. I glance discreetly at Mike, begging him to defy his father. Instead, he chuckles, and I feel a wave of disgust pass over me. He then reaches across the table and gets more food, mouth still processing his first helping. It is Chase instead who speaks up. Chase, Mike's goofy younger brother, who is a few months younger than me. Chase, who has fondly teased me for the past 11 years, and even more ruthlessly once I started dating his brother. Chase himself known for his thoughtless comments, not intending to hurt, but managing to. Dad, now is really not the time. Every word is pushed through gritted teeth as he forces a grin that can only be described as impish. His head and eyes gesture towards his girlfriend, Lily. She's sitting to my left and to Chase's right. She's so silent that I'd almost forgotten she was there. Lily's dark skin becomes the sole focus at the table, even though no one directly looks at her. Her head is tilted towards her plate, and her hair cocoons her face. I don't know what she thinks of our conversation. She hasn't said a word since we sat down. I will never have the courage to ask. The talk and the dinner both come to a muted end, and there is a great scraping of forks and chairs as everyone stands up. George collects our disposable plastic plates and chucks them in the fireplace in the next room where several logs are already blazing. The warmth of the fire doesn't reach the kitchen, but I see the flames jump as they devour the plates, as instead of cleanly burning, the plates warp into hideous black lumps. I imagine I can feel the toxic chemicals sailing out of the mantle, the invisible particles striking my body in an unstoppable attack. They hurt me internally and permanently, just like his words do. This toxicity could have been prevented. George could be a decent person. He could use washable plates.
The writing of the winners of the 2015 Writers' Cafe Contest, sponsored by the University of Pittsburgh Writing Center. Thanks so much to everyone for being here. You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.